This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Venezuela, a power for resources for the globe, but especially for the Americas, until the Chavezistas left a legacy that Nicolas Maduro picked up, a man who is now the president, not necessarily the legitimate president of Venezuela, in the news. I welcome Alison Federca for Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site I recommend. She is an analyst, to comment on the news about Venezuela, placing it across the context of her reporting right now about Venezuela and how we got to this standoff between Washington and Caracas. For example, Reuters, one day ago, Venezuela's sudden policy change may stem from waning support for Maduro. Two, Fox News, within these last days, Venezuela reportedly scraps U.S. deal to deport illegal migrants as some commit crimes to be deported. And three, most pressingly, Brazil's Lula da Silva to discuss Essequibo and election with Venezuela's Maduro. Alison, Venezuela in the news. Let us begin with the idea that Maduro's support may be waning. In your analysis, you're very careful to divide all Venezuela into three groups: the traditional Chavezistas, the reformists, and the opposition. Each group has its ambitions for Venezuela, and much of it is influenced by the sanctions regime, which has been in place since 2014. So let's begin with Maduro's support, which you anticipate in your piece. What does it look like? Who's he losing support with? Good evening to you.
Good evening. So Maduro had support originally from all three groups of the Chavistas: his current supporters, the traditional supporters, and the reformists. Those who are still supporting him and are strong supporters are those that are going to be currently benefiting underneath his regime. And that often includes people that are tied to the state-run economic network for access to basic goods, as well as security networks, think local militias and police, more local-level things, not the military. And then also people involved in different illicit activities, including drug trafficking, that have been able to thrive under the Maduro regime because of the economic decline and blind eye that the government turns to some of these activities. Those are the people that support Maduro. At the same time, he's lost support from former business people that maybe supported him because they were previously benefiting underneath the government regime. He's lost support from the poor class, which is the strongest base of the Chavismo traditionally. These people aren't really seeing any of the social government welfare benefits that they saw, say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago under Chavez. So he has seen a dramatic decline in support that is in no coincidence with the economic decline experienced by the country.
The sanctions regime. I follow your reporting. 2014, PDVSA, the state-run oil company, was sanctioned. 2018, the private enterprise of oil resources was sanctioned by the U.S. 2015, there were certain select organizations, parts of the economy that were given passes because the economy was struggling so severely. 2023, what we have here is a decision in October of last year based upon the Barbados Accords to lift some sanctions in a timeline. What are the Barbados Accords, and how do they suit this idea that Maduro doesn't care?
So the Barbados Accords is a political agreement that has been in the works for a couple of years now. And the concept is that it involves both the Maduro government and the opposition in the country. And they came together initially driven by the U.S. sanctions, saying that they wanted sanction relief. Both the opposition and the government saw that this was doing a lot of damage to not just the oil industry in Venezuela, but also to the average person in terms of their ability to access basic goods. So they came together and said, we want free and fair elections. We want a calendar date and visible chronology for elections to be held. And we also want to have a political openness that guarantees an opposition candidate participating openly in these elections and reduced political persecution on the opposition. And both sides, the government of Maduro and the opposition leaders, agreed to these points. And once they agreed to these points, that's when you saw the U.S. Last October lift all of these sanctions as a bit of a carrot stick approach with Venezuela in terms of how do we get some sort of regime transition moving forward, at the same time not creating total chaos by destroying the Venezuelan economy.
And the opposition then went ahead with a primary. And the primary was dominated by Marina Corina Machado. Who is she, and what does that mean that she is so popular among the opposition?
So the opposition needed a new voice, a new person. Anyone that's followed Venezuela for a while knows that every few years, a new figurehead for the opposition arises. We had Capriles, we had Guaido, now we have Maria Corina Machado. She's very different from her previous opposition leaders in that she is more of a technocrat. So she focuses more on public policy, finance. She embraces a lot of the traditional values of the opposition in terms of reducing the state role in the economy, eliminating welfare payments or reducing them depending on the income of a family, working and promoting the private sector, and reducing the overall power of the executive branch in the country. And these are all broad things that the opposition can agree on. And so she is the current voice for that. And her biggest appeal is that she's gone around the country. She's gotten the support of opposition members countrywide. And the fact that she's focusing on all of these issues that they can agree on makes her the single leader right now in terms of the figurehead that's being presented for the opposition.
We must mention the migrants because it's a matter of New York City and other large cities overwhelmed with the needs of people from Venezuela. There has been some mercy given by the Biden administration for work permits, for example, but it's an overwhelming task for the cities. New York City, I'm most familiar with. Those migrants are a direct result of the collapse of the Venezuelan economy, I'm told. The Venezuelan health care, I'm told. The Venezuela education, I'm told. At the same time, are those migrants a deliberate policy by Maduro? Is he driving his opponents out and making the opposition weaker and weaker by frightening people, depriving them of food and resources?
So it is not necessarily, I wouldn't consider it a direct strategy or an intention by him, but it is certainly a direct consequence of the mismanagement of the government. So when we look at the emigration from Venezuela over, say, the past 5 or 6 years, you're looking at about 7 million people, which is a lot. And they've gone to Colombia. The ones getting into the United States most recently primarily took a land route from Venezuela to Colombia up through Central America to Mexico. And the people are leaving are the people that can. The people who had the most means to leave had left several years ago, many years ago, some even as soon as Chavez took power. And so Maduro doesn't necessarily want to see people leave. The people who are leaving would likely be those who oppose him. But those who are also leaving have gotten to the point where they've lost all hope in the political system, be it supporting the opposition or the government. They've just opted that life is better starting over somewhere else.
This headline about scrapping a deal to deport illegal migrants? What was happening that they're scrapping? Are these big numbers or were these for show about the violence in the cities?
So the decision to no longer cooperate with the deportation of Venezuelan migrants from the United States to Venezuela is primarily a political move by the Maduro government to tell the U.S. that it can play ball. Now, obviously, it does not have the same capacity to act in a way that would harm the United States directly or stand up to Washington directly. But the immigration is a very sensitive issue for U.S. politics right now. And so they know that by denying cooperation on that front, they will make Washington's life more difficult. In terms of the U.S.'s overall migration problem, we're talking about a small group of people here. So that's not going to move the needle one way or another in terms of relieving U.S. pressure in general, but it definitely sends a political message and is a poor look for Washington.
There's a countdown. Hollywood loves countdowns, Allison, so do we. April 18th, what does that represent between Washington and Caracas?
So it is the deadline for when the U.S. may reimpose some of the most damaging sanctions on Venezuela. When it lifted sanctions back in October, this meant that energy, oil, all of those critical components of the Venezuelan economy were free game for U.S. companies to operate in, essentially. Earlier this year, when they banned the opposition primary candidate from participating in future elections, the U.S. reimposed some of those sanctions, including those on the state-run gold company, which was also a very lucrative business for the government. And basically what the U.S. has said to the Maduro government is, okay, we eased up on sanctions as a sign of good faith. You are now getting dangerously close to breaking those Barbados Accords and no longer following your word. We are losing faith in you. So unless you can demonstrate convincingly that you are going to respect these accords and we are going to have these free and fair elections that meet our criteria, we are going to go back and reimpose these sanctions on your oil company and again try to cripple their key economic sector.
At the same time, the Supreme Court or the judiciary has moved to ban or restate the ban of Machado, which would appear to have violated the Barbados Accords. However, has Maduro finessed his way out of that? I didn't do it. The court did it.
He has not finessed his way out of that, but you bring up a good point in that it's Venezuela, and so there are ways to finesse your way out of a lot of things. He can talk about the courts. Also, the Barbados Agreement doesn't specifically mention Marina Machado in the agreement. So all it needs is an opposition candidate to participate. So there may be a way to finesse with the government, with the opposition, an alternative player in some way that isn't necessarily Marina. That's a harder situation to imagine just because she is so popular and it would be hard to replace her. But there is, as you suggest, room to pedal back and try to finesse the situation enough to restore faith and try to avoid those sanctions on the oil sector.
All right, to set the scene before we get much more complicated with foreign affairs. But right now, Maduro is facing an election this year, maybe. And there's an opposition to participate in it, maybe. Maduro has cut off deportation flights from the U.S. The U.S. is saying by April 18th, this must happen or we'll reimpose sanctions. When we come back, enter the very powerful and outspoken president of Brazil, Lula da Silva. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf, thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agent Force, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Life with CIDP can be tough, but the Thrive Team, a specialized squad of experts, helps people living with CIDP make more room in their lives for joy. Watch Rare, Well Done.
An all-new reality series, Rare, Well Done, offers help and hope to people across the country who live with the rare disease CIDP. Watch the latest episode now, exclusively on RareWellDone.com.